It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
And let us just say, at the end of this, when we talk about our favorite scenes, it's going to be our favorite scenes after the hallway scene.
Yeah.
Because that's everyone's favorite scene.
If it wasn't for your suggestion 15 and almost 16 years ago, I probably would never have watched this.
I think the dead should shut up unless there's something to say.
Tell the press that I am the Gemini Lieutenant, or I will punish you.
Punish me?
This movie, for its time, was probably one of the scariest fucking things I had ever seen in my life.
That's commendable.
I've seen this multiple times. It still gets me.
Is everything all right in here, guys?
We're fine!
Now we got a battle. It's priest versus demon again. This is what we've been waiting for. The exorcism is on.
Welcome back to the Horror 101 Show. This is your host, Cash Wampum, bringing you the first segment of our Part 3 themed podcast that we're presenting this year. One of our listeners, Lori Lapamardo, was having a particularly shitty Friday at the end of January, and then she got wind that a new Horror 101 Show would be waiting for her when she got home, and turned her frown upside down. We loved hearing that, and before we crack open Exorcist 3, we had a request from another listener recently who asked us to focus on another great actor who had just passed away.
What pride to use a fellow peer in public so! Damn his pride!
Damn his grace's pride.
There was, we got a long time listener, his name is Tony Kimball, who figured out, if you listen to the very end of the last show, I gave a clue as to what we might be doing. And I had mentioned that January had already taken someone, who was responsible for one of the most influential or important horror movies in the last few decades, and he was on it. He didn't even ask. He's like, okay, I know you're doing Exorcist 3, I know you're gearing up for Exorcist 3, but he asked me, he's like, can you and the guys, or at least you and the crew, do a John Hurt show instead? So I told him, I'm like, listen, I don't think it's going to fit with our theme. However,
never in a part three.
However, I see no reason why we can't give John Hurt our attention the first few minutes of this show. So that's what I wanted to do. For Tony, just for you, because you asked so nicely, we'll give a few minutes in memoriam of John Hurt. Who wants to start?
Are you capable of speaking without flapping your hands about?
Well, you know, I think the big shock of it is that we all kind of forget about John Hurt a lot because he is such a consummate actor. You forget he was in something because he just disappears into the movie. Like how many major franchises that guy was in? Like he was in Harry Potter, he was in Doctor Who, he was in Alien. And yet when people start to think who are the great actors of our generation, I bet you a lot of people forget his name because he's not a movie star. He's not that kind of an actor. He's, like I say, the kind of actor that just kind of disappears into a part, and you don't see them, you see the performance.
I am not an animal! I am a human being!
There was a moment, actually, he had been nominated for The Elephant Man, nominated for Best Actor. And just before the Academy Awards, he ran into an old friend of his at the hall. And they kind of pulled him aside, and they hadn't seen each other in a while. And he's like, you know, congratulated him for being nominated. And then said to him, you know, it's just, you know, a sad thing that you're not going to win. And John Hurt was kind of struck, and he's like, really, why is that? And he says, well, no one's going to know that it was you. They can't tell that it was you. And John Hurt just replied, well, I rather thought that was the point. And I think that's the difference, is that it's more about the performance, more about the part. And so, I mean, you got your big A-list actors like Tom Cruise or Jack Nicholson. You know, you're hiring them for the personality. They basically play themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But guys like John Hurt, you forget they're in the movie. You know, you put a wig on him, like in Rob Roy, it's not John Hurt, it's the Marquis de Montrose.
I am James Graham, Marquis of Montrose, and I will not be mocked.
You know? Easiest way I describe it, he was the Gary Oldman before Gary Oldman.
Yes, exactly. Because you look at actors like Gary Oldman, Dustin Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman, right? These are all actors who just vanish into the parts.
He killed my mother and my brothers, your descendants. Should I not avenge them? Even at the risk of being shunned by all men as a parasite?
John Hurt, well, we had this discussion earlier. John Hurt, for me, is like Harry Dean Stanton. He's not one of those A-list people, yeah. But I'll be damned if he isn't entertaining in every fucking thing that he does.
I would say he's, beyond a doubt, he's consistent. Even some of the lower-end stuff that he was in.
Permit me to introduce myself. My name is Jelon Lamb.
And, by the way, check out The Proposition. It was one of the last movies he did. A screenplay by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis.
Hmm.
Really gripping, gritty Western set in Australia. Oh, where he played, and John Hurt in his 70s, it might have been his late 60s at the time, but he was up there, played a bounty hunter, this grizzled old bounty hunter, and man, is he awesome.
Hmm.
Yeah, so
what's it called?
It's called The Proposition.
What I did without choice.
I know.
In the name of peace and sanity.
But not in the name of the doctor.
So we lost a piece of Alien. We lost one of the doctors, an official doctor.
The War Doctor.
Oh,
which, okay, I gotta say, when I watched that episode where he comes out of the shadows and he's revealed to be the War Doctor, I was giddy. I'm like, what a fucking choice.
Yeah.
And then I watched the episode he was in, and it was underwhelming.
Oh, no, see, no.
It was
no,
underwhelming.
No, it was not. It was,
yes,
awesome.
It was. All
this
of
is gonna get cut from the show, because I will bludgeon you to death with a microphone.
No.
Speaking ill of Doctor Who in front of me, that is throwing down the gauntlet.
It was just a fucking reason for three guys to go like this. That's it. That's all it was, man. I'm come on, where's the substance here?
It wasn't written for you. It was written for, you know, fans of the show.
I like the show. I'm into it.
No, you couldn't be.
I am.
Wait a minute, this movement. It seems to have life. Organic life.
John Hurt was the first person to ever fall victim to the Xenomorph.
Do a chest burster.
Yeah, the chest burster, it was, well, until the prequels, right?
Yeah. Well, he sold the shit out of that.
Yeah. It was like, that scene in Alien, that was a scene, Ridley Scott had a big thing about keeping shit quiet. So when he had Giger on and the effects people to make it, he made sure that nobody knew what was going on. So obviously they could tell they were setting up for something, because it was like half a body and all the prosthetics and all that shit was there. They didn't know what was going to happen. So when that thing flies out... and all this blood flies all over the place. Everybody in that room, all the actors and actresses, were fucking just confounded.
Oh, God!
Who's the girl that played Lambert? What's her name? You're good with names.
Veronica Cartwright.
Thank you. She passed out. Nude favorite John Hurt film? Besides Alien.
Besides Alien?
That is my only... To be perfectly honest, I'm not totally familiar with a lot more than Alien that he does.
Did you watch Rubber Boy with us that night?
No, I didn't just watch Rubber Boy. Yeah.
You ever seen 1984?
No, I only read the book.
Mm. Frankenstein Unbound?
No.
The Elephant Man?
No.
Do not, I say, speak in my stead.
So there,
That's for Tony Kimble. So a little John Hurt love there. Hope he enjoys it.
Do you take me entirely for a Wigzer?
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
And now on to the meat and potatoes of why we're here. Nude, why are we here?
We're starting our first of several, hopefully, of the part threes.
When we were in Florida, we were watching the news and got wind that the writer of The Exorcist, William Peter Blatty, passed away. And we had tried to do Exorcist 3 before in this show. It didn't work, so it was shelved. So we knew that at some point we'd have to revisit it. So as soon as I heard that Blatty was dead, it was time to revisit Exorcist 3. And I'm hoping that this movie has enough replayability for everybody that it's a good time.
It should.
Interesting thing about Blatty, I was watching an interview with William Friedkin, who directed the original Exorcist back in 73. And the way they met was, Friedkin met Blake Edwards.
Oh, nice.
Blake Edwards had this this script, and he wanted to work with Friedkin after, I think it was right after he made The French Connection, but The French Connection wasn't out yet, so it wasn't a big fucking deal. Nobody really knew who Friedkin was, but Blake Edwards wanted Friedkin to work on this movie. He had the script, and the script was horrible. And Friedkin called him on it. He's like, you know what? I like you. I like your work. I'd really like to work for you or with you, but not on this because, quite frankly, it's horrible. And he gave it to him straight. And he's like, okay, I just told Blake Edwards his script shit. That's probably end right there. So he just got up and kind of left. And Blatty was witness to this exchange. So he ran after him and he's like, listen, I've never seen anybody tell Blake the way it is. And he's like, you're absolutely right. Everybody knows that that script is shit, but you're the only one who's said it. Everybody else is licking this guy's ass saying, yes, it's great, it's wonderful, let's do it. But you were the first one to call it as it was, so I trust your integrity. I trust your judgment. I'd really like to work on with you. Well, a couple years later, Blatty meets him again. He's like, here, take the script. He gives him the script for The Exorcist. And Friedkin had this script in his briefcase while he was doing some tour. For like weeks, it just sat there. He never got to it because he was so busy. Well, one night, he made dinner plans. About 8 o'clock, he started reading the script at about 6, 6.30. An hour later, he called and canceled his plans. And then he called Blatty immediately. He just read right through it. He's like, this is fantastic. We have to do this film. And that's where the collaboration between William Peter Blatty and William Friedkin making 73's The Exorcist, that was the genesis of that project right there.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You'd like that?
Intensely.
I had always heard that Blatty and Friedkin were at odds while they were making the film, because Blatty made the original book, and Friedkin was directing the film. So Friedkin wanted to go in this direction, and Blatty wanted to go in this direction, so they were at odds, but I think everybody can agree that the film is very important, and a huge success. It was very scary, and just really hit every mark correctly. You watch The Exorcist, and there's not much you want to change about it. It's a very, very good film. Fast forward 15 years later, in 1990, I remember, personally, I was 14. And my Fangoria was telling me that, okay, Exorcist 3 is coming. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I had watched The Heretic. The Heretic was a piece of shit. It was a horrible film. The John Borman movie?
No.
It's a horrible fucking movie.
I like John Borman. John Borman's a great director.
It was a flop in every way. As much as Exorcist was great, the Borman film was a flop. So when Exorcist 3's coming around, I'm thinking to myself, oh boy, how low can they sink? And, you know, even I remember watching it at the Palace, and I was taken so off guard by this film. Like, there's something about the first 60 seconds of the movie that just filled me with dread, and I was on edge the whole time. And I have no problem saying this in front of you and the audience and everybody. This movie, for its time, was probably one of the scariest fucking things I had ever seen in my life.
Morgan Creek proudly presents The Exorcist 3, Legion. Written and directed by William Peter Blatty, creator of The Exorcist.
To give you listeners an idea of what this film means to me, I'd like to take you back to the very beginning of this show, or to the beginning of every show that we've ever made. You're used to hearing Tubular Bells kick off this podcast, but the clip I used wasn't from the original Exorcist. There was a conscious decision made to make sure that the very first thing you hear when playing a Horror 101 podcast was the opening of The Exorcist 3.
The beginning of the film, they show the rowers, you know it's Georgetown, and you see this elderly priest walking up to and stopping at the top of something, and then it cuts to that famous staircase at the end of Exorcist where Father Karras takes his tumble. So all of a sudden, it's smart enough to put us in an environment that we recognize. Okay, we're here. This is the Exorcist. You see that stairway, and you immediately think the Exorcist. I thought that was smart. But then it transitions into an empty fucking church at night, and just the sound design, the growling, and the different things, the still shots that it gives you a feeling like something is not right. And then the doors bust open, and it's that horrible fucking noise. I don't know what they did to make that noise, but it gives me a chill every fucking time I hear it. The statue of Christ's eyes opening up. He's looking right at you. And it bothered me. I remember when I first watched this movie, I'm like, what the fuck's that about? Why are you looking at me like that? What did I do?
By the way, we're going to set that sound effect to your text messaging tone on your phone.
Oh, whenever I get a text, that like, what the fuck is that? Oh, it's Brian Simpson. What does he want?
It's just a smiley face.
Oh, dear Lord. Dear Lord.
Yeah, you know what? That's what draws you in. But what keeps you in the film, though, is, believe it or not, some rather funny dialogue, actually. It's the comedic and kind of warm relationship between George C. Scott and
Ed Flanders.
Yeah, Ned Flanders.
Ed Flanders.
What are you doing out here? Founding an order called Lurking Fathers.
I've been standing out there for centuries. Four new popes have been elected. It's a lot of white smoke.
You'll see Ed Flanders. You can catch him in Salem's Lot. Have you ever seen Ed, Salem's Lot? He played Bonnie Bedelia's father in that film. That's the only thing right now that comes to mind that I remember him in. But I liked the chemistry of those two. Yeah. Their banter together. You can tell that these two people have been friends for a long time. You know, like even as old men, they're jibing each other.
What are you doing?
I need some lemon drops.
We'll be late for the start of the picture.
I once spent a year hearing children's confessions, and I wound up a lemon drop junkie. Little weirdos keep breathing in on you along with all that pot, and between the two of them, I've got a feeling it's probably addictive.
But they understand each other very well, too, because the whole reason for doing the annual film screening, like they always go to the theater on the day that Father Karras fell down the stairs.
Yes, every day, every year on that day, they get depressed. Well, the thing is, like, if you watch the first Exorcist film, Father Dyer is in that film.
Yeah.
Father Dyer is the guy who gives Damien his last rites. He's the priest at the end of the film who's crying over the body, asking if he wants to give his last confession. It's a very powerful scene. Mm-hmm. And Kinderman is in the first movie. It's not George C. Scott, it's a different actor. They just meet in the course of his investigation of the death of Burt Dennings. And you can tell that they form a bond. They like the same theater. They kind of jibe at each other. So I can get behind the fact that had Karras lived a little bit longer, they probably would have become very good friends. But this sequel suggests that they were excellent friends when Karras passed away.
In the meantime, we have cancer and mongoloid babies and murderers, monsters prowling the planet, even prowling this neighborhood, Violet. Right now, while our children suffer.
It's that kid that got killed on the dock, isn't it? I heard it on the news. You want to talk about it?
You could easily show me a decapitated boy crucified on a pair of rowing oars with the statue of Christ and the ingots and the ice. You could show me that and I'd be like, oh, that's horrible. But to have George C. Scott sit there during dinner and describe what he found to this priest who just a moment ago was all jovial and whatnot, and just his reaction to listening to what was done to this child draws such a horrible picture in my mind, it's much more effective.
Killer drove an ingot into each of his eyes and cut off his head. The place of his head was the head from a statue of Christ. all done up in blackface, like a minstrel show, you know. The eyes and the mouth painted white. The boy had been crucified on a pair of rowing oars.
For watchers and listeners, our own imagination is worse than something what could actually happen. We could picture the worst possible thing ever. And I think hearing a story, be it from George C. Scott or, you know, Ed Flanders, whatever the case may be, them describing and be as descriptive as they are, it's more fearful that way, because what exactly happened? We don't even know. We have a description, but how horrific, how much blood? Everything is going through your mind, and it's that much more scary.
There is an evil that has been unleashed on Georgetown. It begins as a horrible story by a homicide detective. But as the movie progresses, this evil is brought closer and closer to the foreground.
May the Lord be in your heart, help you to confess your sins.
I have a scrupulous conscience, Father. This need to confess, it torments me.
Yeah. What's creepier about that, too, is the way they keep doing the cut. It's done in two-shot, priest, and then what the priest sees, and it's pitch black.
Yeah.
Through that window, the confessional window.
There's the look of horror on his face, yeah.
And they must have tested the sound of that voice, because it almost reminded me of Billy from Black Christmas. Because, sure, it sounds like an old woman, but it sounds like somebody trying to sound like an old woman. It sounds fake. It sounds false and just overdone to a point where it's not hokey. It's like, what are they trying to do? It throws you off edge.
Try to make a good confession. And remember, Christ forgives us all of our sins.
Only little things. Nothing. 17 of them, Father. The first was that waitress near Candlestick Park. I cut her throat and watched her bleed. She bled a great deal. It's a problem that I'm working on, Father. All this bleeding.
You see the old woman being shuffled into the church, and then you have the scene with the priest, and immediately after that, when he's found and they're screaming and oohs and ahs, you see the same old lady leaving the church. So the script is telling you, this fucking old lady just killed this priest, but how and why, you know? Yeah. How is this little old lady who's shuffling around, can't move more than a few centimeters a second, going to pull this shit off? You know, it's a mystery, which unravels. Really smart script.
One thing that this movie does, too, is it tramples on the concept of holy ground. Remember, there's always the whole idea that, you know, consecrated ground, churches and that, you know, devil knows supposed to go there.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently he can walk in the door and kill whoever in the hell he wants. He can blow out the doors and do whatever. So I do like that sets it up so that there really is no safe haven.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Nick, because if you remember the first Exorcist, there is severe desecration of the church and the Exorcist. Remember when the priest goes and there's all that shit put on the Mother Mary? And even at the very beginning of the film, when all the fucking shit happens in the church, you're told at the very, very beginning, even the church is not safe here.
What's this nonsense?
Well, nothing's really wrong. They're just doing some tests.
You couldn't find the rabbit?
I don't know you.
I thought you told me there's nothing really wrong with you.
There isn't. My brother Eddie had these same stupid symptoms for years.
Your brother Eddie died at the age of 30.
So what? He got killed in Vietnam.
There could have been some connection.
A connection?
Are you sure this isn't serious, Joe?
Well, with Eddie there was...
You shut up about Eddie!
With my brother it was nerves.
You make a lot of people nervous.
Only sinners.
Everybody!
Is everything all right in here, guys?
We're fine!
When Father Dyer is killed in his hospital room and Kinderman has to go see the body of his friend, killed with an M.O. that nobody has ever seen, ever, in their entire life, this is when the film takes a dramatic turn towards that evil.
Go ahead, Lieutenant.
Temple, why are you encouraging
you to shut your mouth?
Excuse me.
What is believed to be a copycat killer at first. Now, we have no reason to believe that it isn't a copycat killer, that the Gemini... Somebody's, you know, stumped, come across the Gemini seal killer murders, and they're kind of reenacting them. But it isn't until that scene with George C. Scott, when he reveals that all of the kind of trademarks of the Gemini killer were fabricated.
For the press.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, anything publicly known was false.
Right.
But now, all of a sudden, he's got three brand new murders, one of which is a close friend of his, where the signs of the Gemini are absolute, they are correct.
In this case, gentlemen, in this, three decapitations, three victims, with this finger severed, the correct one, and the sign of the Gemini here. The Gemini wrote letters to the newspapers bragging about his murders, and he always doubled his final L's, whatever the word, two L's, as in wonderful.
It's a wonderful life.
The more I think about it, the smarter it is, because if you watch The Exorcist, after Father Marin is found dead, when Karis walks into the room, finds Marin on the floor dead, and the demon is sitting on the bed laughing at him, and he just loses it, grabs her, beats the fuck out of her.
You son of a bitch!
And says to come into me. He's like, come into me. And right before he flies out the window, you see that happen. There is a transference there. Karis is possessed by the evil and throws himself out the window. This film suggests, what happens if Karis didn't expire from that? What happens if he had just enough life left, and the devil or Satan or whoever was involved in the evil slipped this Gemini killer in and said, here's a vessel, it's damaged, but have a go at it. And after 15 years, he's revived, and now he's in league with Satan, giving him the power of possession to go and do all these nasty things. Sure, I can buy that. That's exactly what this film is. It's a great sequel.
Incidentally, who is this Damien you mentioned?
Don't you know?
I know nothing. Except I must go on killing Daddy. I must shame him.
The Gemini is dead.
No, I am not! I'm alive! I go on! I breathe! Look at me! Look at me! And tell me what you see!
I see a man who looks like Damien Karras.
A lot of people, you know, I was watching a few people on YouTube, you know, good reviewers that were covering this film, and they couldn't believe that Brad Dourif wasn't up for any kind of an award. He was just so absolutely fucking scary.
Dourif, he's always been a favorite of mine. I freaking love Brad Dourif.
Was Brad Dourif known for doing horror films when this came up?
Just Chucky.
He was Chucky before this.
Before that,
he dabbled in sci-fi. He was in the David Lynch's.
I always remember him from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Right. So
yeah,
but
he was in Fatal Beauty, a couple other things. That was back when he still had his long hair. He had cut his hair between Child's Play and this movie. He had cut his hair. Mm-hmm. But watching this man sit there, yelling and screaming and raving, like, and he's chained to the floor in a straitjacket. I'm still afraid of this guy.
Tell the press that I am the Gemini Lieutenant, or I will punish you.
Punish me?
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Do you dance?
What do you mean?
Imagine Karis is kind of like a puppet, and the demon has sole control over this puppet, but whenever it suits him, he gets to stick his fucking hand up his ass and deposit the Gemini killer.
So, as Karis was about to slip out of his body, is this true? The master was slipping me in. Oh, now there was some confusion when the medic said that Karis was dead. I mean, he was dead, technically speaking. I mean, his time was up. He wanted out. But I was in.
I don't believe you're the Gemini killer.
Oh, you are issuing a clear invitation to the dance.
What does that mean?
Never mind.
And let us just say, at the end of this, when we talk about our favorite scenes, it's going to be our favorite scenes after the hallway scene.
Yeah.
Because that's everyone's favorite scene.
Yeah, Nick said last show, we can't call dibs on a favorite scene anymore.
Yeah.
Can't I get any sleep? What the hell do you want?
I'm very sorry. Honestly, it has a patience that we don't get in a lot of movies nowadays. Was it a jump scare? Yeah. But it's probably the slowest burn, like it's the longest draw up. It's got a patience that you just don't get in movies nowadays. Nowadays, what movies do to throw you off on a jump scare is they know when you're expecting it and they wait a beat.
Or the other side is you wait for the joke.
Yes.
Partway into the joke, they do the jump scare.
Yeah, exactly. They basically, nowadays, most jump scares are programmed to fuck up our timing because we've learned to expect them. Whereas this, I've seen this multiple times. It still gets me.
Oh my god. What the fuck is that? And I remember when I first watched this movie, the thing that scared me the most is that it went by so fast, I couldn't process what I was seeing. I thought originally that it was a headless statue of Christ that came after her. That's what I visualized when I first watched it. And I couldn't pause it and rewind it, and I couldn't satisfy my curiosity. It bothered me for fucking days. I had to go back and watch this movie again immediately just to sit up for that scene and say, what is it?
And just, like this.
And of course, the scene's like 4 minutes long, so the whole time I'm there, I'm like, okay, here it is. And my blood was fucking pumping, and I had the sweats just anticipating this goddamn scene to come, but I'm like, what is it? And then it went by so fast. It wasn't until I got my hands on this thing in VHS where I paused it and went, aha! It's a shrouded fucking figure.
It's old Ben Withers who runs the haunted amusement park.
It's a shrouded fucking figure.
Did you get my message? I left it with Keating. Nice girl. Good heart.
Basically, any moment he's speaking is my favorite moment in that movie.
Just so, for the record, I eliminated that because yeah. I would have just said.
I just would have said this part and this part and this part. It's Brad Dourif talking, then that.
Yeah.
But honestly, the part that I just gave me like the squeaky freakies was the old lady was on the ceiling.
Oh yeah, which that doesn't fit the rest of the movie at all.
No, I know it doesn't. But you know what? The way that they did it and the effect in that. I love it. Just gave me the. It was like watching a fucking spider. Like, it was just weird.
It's just the control that he has.
Yeah, it was him flexing his muscles.
All the catatonic, because he could. Exactly. Yeah. Just because.
And she's like right above him. Like, we know how fucking strong they are. At any given moment, she could have just dropped off the ceiling and ripped his goddamn head off. Like,
and that smile.
He could have killed him at any time. That's basically what he's showing.
Hit the light.
God almighty!
I want my mommy.
Just toys.
Is that a crime?
He's after someone who... Oh, you are issuing a clear invitation to the dance. To the dance. To the dance. To the Judy.
Right, he gets the message from the Gemini Killer, the little hint that he's going after his daughter.
Yes. Yeah.
And so he races home, and our hearts are beating like, is he going to get there in time? That's what they set it for. It's the classic, the villain always goes much slower than the hero and still manages to get there, right? It's because the possessed nurse is in the back of the taxi, and the taxi's making full stops at every stop sign. It's driving very slowly. And meanwhile, they are just cutting through traffic, sirens blaring, trying to get to the house on time.
Ram it if you have to, ram it!
And then when we get there, it defies our expectations because we expected there to be a nick and, just in the nick of time moment. And instead, nothing happens. They get there and the nurse is just sitting at the table, patiently waiting for them to get there.
Yeah.
Please help me. Is it bedtime?
So is she staying for dinner or what?
And suddenly the voice kicks in. It's like, I was waiting here for you.
And then there's that sound again as she pulls the shears out of the bag.
It's like, there they are! Oh, what the fuck's that? What are those for?
Catatonics are so easy to possess. I've been waiting for you, Lieutenant. I wanted you to see this.
Judy!
Yeah, when the mother yanks her daughter, and as they're closing, she's being pulled out of the blades as they're closing. It is, I don't know how many times they had to work to get that shot, but they nailed it. It was stunning. And then, of course, the follow-up to that, oh, God, she's rescued, but no, there's still no safety, because now she's throwing people across the room, and it just, yeah, it's too good.
And then it goes into one of my favorite scenes when you hear the demon go, what's this? And then that transition, that loss of power, which seems to be hurtful.
Yeah, where she's
very hurtful. She's just out. Like, oh, my God, what has happened to me? And that horrible scream as she slowly backs down to the floor, and then the door opens and the priest is there, and you're like, okay, now we got a battle. Now we got a battle. It's priest versus demon again. This is what we've been waiting for. The exorcism is on.
Again. You've interrupted me. Have you come to save God's servant? Well, I must save mine, my son, the Gemini. But come in, Father Morning. Enter, Night. This time you're going to lose.
I love how the end of this movie is them finally putting Father Karras to rest.
Yeah.
Because we watch him get possessed and then tumble to what we assume to be a death at the end of the film, but that's it. You see Father Dyer giving him his last rites. You can see his hand is still moving. He's not quite dead, which is also very smart. In this film, it actually says, okay, well, here's an idea. What if he didn't die? But at the end of this film, he's in the ground, and there's the gravestone, and that's the end of this film.
Yeah.
The Father Karras' story has now ended. Let's score it. Nude.
10.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Absolutely.
Fucking it! Like there was nothing about this film that didn't sit well with you at all.
No, I mean the extra half. It's normally a 9.5, but the extra half is for sentiment only because if it wasn't for your suggestion, 15 and almost 16 years ago, I probably would never have watched this movie.
Yeah, I put you on the right track.
Have been married.
Exactly.
The timeline would have been
absolutely
altered.
If I had okay, there was films that I asked her to watch. I asked her to watch Event Horizon. I asked her to watch Exorcist 3. Do you remember the other titles? Because you rented them that day. Because I met you at fucking...
Well, that's it. Your marriage is on the line.
It was reruns.
That's
video.
It.
Reruns.
If I'd have told her to watch movies that she thought fucking might have sucked, she probably would not have acquiesced to meeting me again. So I can thank Exorcist 3 as being a part of our union.
Very nice. Seen it 37 times. That's commendable.
Brian Stewart?
You know what? I'm going to... For me, it's a solid 9. And I realize saying that now, it sounds like I'm shitting on the movie after Helen's praise. Feels like 9, this movie sucks. Only got a 9. Hell. No, it's just a few tonal things here and there. Like I said, the dream sequence is kind of lost on me. I don't mind the slow pacing, but at the same time, I don't know what it is. I just can't seem to give it the perfect mark. I don't have the personal attachment to the film, but it's still enjoyable. It still has, like I say, repeat value. Yeah, I feel like now I'm saying 9's a bad score.
No, it's not.
No, 9's an excellent score.
Shouldn't you be reading from the Gospels or something?
They don't give you all the fashions.
This is true.
Damn right.
Nick, score it!
I'm gonna give her 9.5.
9.5? Holy fuck, this is big scores here. Expand.
Well, I've seen this 3 times now. This is my 3rd viewing. And I, aside from a few minor work interruptions, you know, I enjoyed it. Like, this one has repeat value for me. I know my wife hasn't seen it, and I did finally get her to watch The Exorcist not too long ago. We're going to skip 2. I'm sorry. But we're probably going to, because this is a continuation, you know, yeah. But I'm sorry, I'm not going to waste it. Because if we go to watch 2 and it sucks, there's no way in hell I'm getting her to watch 3.
These Jews are crazy.
They are. They're all wackos. Next, they'll want to eat papaya.
My God.
I'll give this movie a 9.5. There's not a lot that I don't like about this film. The one thing that I'll give this movie is I will never, until I die, forget the experience of being 14 and watching this film and being completely off guard, having it rope me in after the first 2 minutes and then just sucker punching me every, say, half an hour throughout the film.
Yep.
This movie scared the fuck out of me. And as much as I enjoy at least several of the Child's Play movies, Brad Dourif being the voice of Chucky, he's synonymous with that doll. I don't think they could make a Child's Play movie without him, to be honest. He's as much to Chucky as Robert Englund is to Freddy. This film really showed his acting chops.
And isn't that really what counts in the end? Yes, of course. Good showbiz, Lieutenant, the effect.
And the best part about it, now that I reflect on it, is that it was written and directed by the guy that wrote the original Exorcist, William Peter Blatty. He wrote the script, he directed the film, and it's to me, it's a true sequel to the original Exorcist that everybody, especially Nude, knows and loves. It is a fantastic sequel.
If you will forgive me, I will leave this mystical conversation. Too much of aesthetics always gives me a headache.
Is it something I said?
Mother India is calling you, Father.
And there you have it, my friends, our first of the Part 3 podcasts featuring William Peter Blatty's masterpiece, The Exorcist 3. Finally, we get Legion out for our listeners. It's been a long time coming. We had over 2 hours of discussion following this film. There's just so much greatness there. We just scratched the surface here today. If you've never seen it, please do yourself a favor. Give yourself time to rewatch the original Exorcist from 73 and then follow it up with Blatty's Part 3, and the two combined will make one hell of a great evening, we promise you. And once again, rest in peace John Hurt, who passed away earlier this year at 77. His contributions to horror and indeed all of cinema will certainly not be forgotten anytime soon. We're not certain which Part 3 we'll be showcasing next. I'm certain we'll be dropping hints on our Facebook page in the coming weeks. Be sure to visit us there and check for those. Drop us a line. Comments are welcome. Thanks again to Lori for letting us know that our show made at least one of her Fridays better. And Tony Kimball, thanks again for the John Hurt request. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nicholas McPherson, and my lovely wife, Nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And Exorcist 3 should do it. But if not, we're still going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.
It's funny, 15 years, we've been together 15 years.
Oh my god. Oh my god, where are the shears? If I see big-ass garden shears anywhere in this place, I'm out.